Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
Like
I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-KARS-4KIDS.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studio, presented by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. In Odyssey Station.
The Score!
And a swing and a miss. Good sharp slider by Keegan Thompson. Excellent job by the young right-hander. Another solid performance for him. Let's see if the Cubs can get some runs.
Center to left. Nasty pitch. Keegan Thompson.
Yeah. Snapdragon curveball after the heater. Just absolutely locks him up.
I think having a little more experience and, having some of that under my belt, yes, it does give you a little more confidence. And when you're throwing well, you have a lot of confidence as well. So, yeah, I'm excited to get back on the mound between each pitch.
You're listening to The Score, Sports Radio 670, the Sunday morning baseball show is Hit and Run. I'm your host, Matt Spiegel. And let's talk to that man with a snapdragon. Has he heard his curveball called a snapdragon before? Does he like it? He's pitching really, really well and joins us right now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Hello, Keegan Thompson. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for the time. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So snapdragon, have you heard that one for the curveball?
I think that's a first, but I like it.
What historically, what do you like to call the curveball? Or what have people called it that you enjoy?
I think the typical words for curveball is usually like a hammer or something like that.
Yeah, yep. Uncle Charlie, I've heard. But the hammer,
Uncle Charlie, that's a good one.
Yeah, I like the hammer, though, but it's weird because, like, it curves. Most hammers are not supposed to curve, but, you know, who the hell am I?
I know. It's just one of those weird baseball terms, I guess.
Yeah, right? There's a lot of them. What do you love throwing right now in terms of your breaking stuff? It seems like, because you got a 5-pitch mix, it looks like they're all pretty good right now. How do they feel?
They also pretty well. I like having two. I have a cutter and a curveball right now. I like having both of them just, you know, for if one day one's not working, then I can lean on the other one a little more. But right now they're both working pretty well for me, so I enjoy throwing them both at any given time.
Yeah, understandably so. Keegan Thompson has pitched in five games, 2 2/3 on the low end, 4 innings on the high end in all five games, and it's been really good. Do you feel like it's interesting because I know you've been a starter, obviously, and maybe could be again, and everybody asks about it. But this is you. You're pitching like every 4 days, maybe every 5 days. It sort of is a rhythm the way that you're getting used right now.
Yeah, at the moment, I'm being the long guy. I'm getting my three. Typically, it's about 3 days off and then throw the fourth day. But, you know, with everything going on, you never know what's going to happen, whether it be starting, long relief, one inning works here and there. I'm just trying to do whatever I can to help them win.
Is it specific from between you and David Ross? Like on a given morning, do you tell him, yeah, I could go today? Like, how does that work? How does that function every day?
Yeah, after the long outings, you know, they usually give me 1 or 2 days where I'm down for sure, and then that third day or whatever, they'll come and they're like, hey, how you feeling? Like, yeah, sometimes they're like, hey, I'll probably meet another day, or, you know, yeah, I'm good to go today. So just communication between Rossi and Tommy and our bullpen coach, CY.
What do you feel in your arm when you're used like this? I mean, you've done everything. You've done short relief. You've done now being the long man like this and being the starter. It's like, do you have a really good feel on that arm and when it might be hurting a little or when it just needs a little rest? It's got to be a very tricky thing as an athlete to understand in full.
Yeah, I think early on especially, you're usually always more sore than, you know, later on in the year. I think it's just getting that groove and getting your arm used to throwing. You know, so however many pitches you need to throw, however often you need to throw. And especially with a shortened spring this year, it's been a little bit tougher on guys. And, you know, we're getting there, and everyone's in the same boat. So I don't think any one person can complain or, you know, gripe about it more than the other because everyone's in the same boat.
Yeah, they are. It's true. You know, I was looking back at your story, Keegan, and remembering that in 2019, when you had the elbow soreness, got put on the injured list that April and only pitched like a couple of times that year. And then 2020, there was the whole cancellation of the season. So you went almost 2 full years without pitching in an actual sanctioned game. That must have been crazy. What was challenging? What was the most challenging about that for you?
The toughest part for me was, you know, missing all of 2019. And then coming back for spring, I came back in the best shape I think I'd ever been in, you know, at that time. And we were in spring for 3 weeks and then we got sent home. So in my mind, I was like, dang, you know, I just lost 1 year and now I'm about to lose another. And so the hardest thing was, I mean, it's kind of one of those same things again, like everyone's in the same boat. Like you can't just sit there and wallow in your own sorrows. You have to get out and, you know, work. We had a couple guys where I was and, you know, we'd meet up and we'd throw every day in hopes of things starting back up. And I think it was later that June or July that the season got going. So, you know, you just got to stay in a good mental headspace.
Got you.
That's really it.
So during the lockout, when like other people are freaking out, maybe about like not being in contact with the team, were you one of those guys who's like, "Huh, this is nothing. I went 2 years once. Come on, boys, this is nothing."
I mean, I wouldn't say I was not worrying at all. You know, we all wanted to get back and play, and you know, not to worry about all these different little minute details that are in effect now. But I did enjoy the extra couple weeks at home with my wife and the dogs and, you know, just going to spend some extra time at home with them that we don't usually normally get.
That's awesome. Keegan Thompson joining us right here on 670 The Score. So growing up in Alabama, Was it always Auburn? Were you an Auburn guy? Over an Alabama guy? Obviously, you ended up playing there, but like Iron Bowls, were you cheering for Auburn as a kid?
I grew up an Alabama fan, actually.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but my whole family was. But when someone else comes to you and will pay for your school and play all the sport you love, and, you know, you go there, and, you know, I still pull for Alabama in football. I'm not playing Auburn, but other than that, I'm a full Auburn man, so.
So how did that go while you were there, though, Keegan? Like, when they're playing football and you're a baseball player for Auburn, were you telling people that you were rooting for Alabama, or did you keep it low? How did that go?
I mean, my friends knew, but the first Iron Bowl when I was at Auburn was the kick six game, so I turned pretty quickly.
See, there it is. I've never been to that game. I want to go to that game to feel that atmosphere. How special is that?
It's nuts. It's got to be one of the best rivalries in college football, I think. So getting to experience that, it's one of the four things you can do at a college football atmosphere.
That's really, really cool. Hey, Keegan, I've decided this year I'm going to ask every player, every coach I get a chance to, a couple of questions about your baseball history, okay? So these just three quickies for you. Here's one. Who was one of your most favorite players in the past when you were a kid, or now if you want to, but and tell me why, one of your most favorite Major League Baseball players?
I think one of my favorite players growing up was probably Chipper Jones. Growing up in Alabama, you know, we didn't really have any like professional sports team close. So the Braves were always on, and that's who you rooted for if you were from in Alabama. So he was one of the better players. So growing up watching him and like Andrew Jones in center field and I think probably, yeah, Chipper Jones is probably my favorite player growing up.
It's pretty awesome. Number one pick overall, Chipper Jones. To live up to it over the course of a career, that's special stuff, isn't it?
Of course. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. What is the best game you ever had a chance to see in person, Keegan Thompson? The best Major League Baseball game you ever had a chance to see?
The best game I ever had a chance to see in person?
Yeah.
I went to one professional baseball game when growing up, and I was, I think, seven. So I don't remember that one too much, but probably the no-hitter last year in L.A.
That's awesome, because Dirty Craig Kimbrell had no idea as he was finishing it, but you knew, apparently.
I did not know.
Oh!
I don't think really anyone in the bullpen knew except for our coach. For the bullpen coach.
that's hilarious, because the Mets just did it the other night, and clearly they all knew. Like, so right? You see those highlights? They communicated better than you guys, apparently.
they much better than we did.
And then what is one thing you'd want to change if you were the commissioner? If you were the commissioner, you could change one thing, Keegan.
Shoot, that's a hard one. I guess for me as a pitcher, I guess the balls, you know, the balls usually are a little different from one to the next. So I guess if we could find a way just to make sure all the balls are the same, I know it would be tough with all the different climates and everything, but that's probably one of the main things I would change. Trying to get the balls to be the same across the board.
See, that's ridiculous that it's even something that has to be discussed. Like, I know it changes from year to year a little bit, but literally the fact, like, you might get a ball, like, during the course of an inning, do you feel like you have two different kinds of baseballs or multiple different kinds?
Yeah, I mean, different people rub the baseball, so not every ball is rubbed by the same person or rubbed the same way. So, I mean, it's just small things that can change how a baseball feels. So, I mean, it's something really hard and would be difficult to explain, but it would be a hard one to change, but it would be nice if it could happen.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And then last thing, have you had a chance to talk to Andrew McCutchen at all? here as you guys are back together after the stuff that went down at Wrigley a couple weeks back?
No, I'm not going to talk to him, but I know he's a great guy, and I don't think there's any hard feelings between the two of us, so... But I'm not going to try to talk to him.
Yeah, you were in a tough spot, man. Yeah, you were in a very tough spot. You know, we could see what was going on, and it's just an awkward go. Keegan Thompson, thanks so much, man. Appreciate getting a chance to talk to you a little bit. Keep rolling, keep killing it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right,
have a good day.
You too. That's Keegan Thompson of the Cubs, right there on 670 The Score. An Alabama fan playing for Auburn. Okay. All right. That's nuts. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. If you want to hop in a little bit later, Cowboy Joe West, if you missed it, it was really, really fun. So we'll bring it to you a little bit later on. But first, let's go to Stan in Bellwood, who has been hanging. Always a pleasure. A staple of Hit and Run's past and present again. I like it. Good morning, Stan.
You don't make it too hard for me to live up to the billing. I'm getting old, man. And listen, you got it right earlier about using the term decompose. I feel like I'm in decompose mode after watching the White Sox this first month of the season. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man. It should be more fun, right, Stan? It's supposed to be more fun this year. And there's a lot of factors that don't make it as fun as it could be, unfortunately.
That's right. Well, we're only 1 month in. Like I said, I want to talk about the White Sox here. Injuries, of course, have to be factored in. But I have to do a little bit of pushing back on you this morning because I don't share your optimism and I don't totally agree with your assessment of the team. The White Sox play in the weakest, crappiest division, not just in the American League, but in all of baseball. 1 month in, they're already 4 games under 500. They're 3-9 in that division. They're minus 23 in run differential, and they're either dead last or near last in the American League in hitting, in defense, and in pitching. Those are symptoms of a bad team, not just a good team that's off to a bad start. The only saving grace that they have, Speaks, is that they play in the Central. Nobody's going to run away and hide in that division. If they were playing in either the American League East or West, it would be over before it started. So it's going to take a big, big lift just to get back to even. I know they're better than they played, but the fact that they play against the weakest opposition, you know, that they could possibly play, it just didn't give you any reason for optimism. I mean, they've got a long road to hoe after just 1 month. That's not good. I'm not optimistic. I have to see it. I mean, Vince Velasquez, I agree with you. He was terrific last night, but he has a track record.
No, I know. Hey, Stan, let's have a conversation. I'm optimistic about the offense specifically, about the bats hitting the balls and them eventually going out with the way that they need to go out. I'm not optimistic about the quality of infield defense. I think Tim Anderson's been really bad this year and disappointing in that way. And we'll see what happens. There are certainly things to be distressed about. I'm worried about Liam Hendricks, that's for sure. But like in this division, I think they can slug their way to absolutely the top of this division if they start slugging. The starting pitching's been good. You got to look at that overall and be kind of pleasantly surprised at the overall quality of the starting pitching, which is not something people thought was going to be the case.
Quality to it, Speaks. At least, you know, not until Lance Lynn gets back. Giolito, you know, looks like he's coming back. But there's a long road to listen. I agree with you about the division. That's their only saving grace is that they play in the American League Central because the Twins are in first place. They're the only team in the division over 500, and they're not that good. So I mean, we'll see. But It's a ridiculously low bar to be the best team in the American League Central. That's the only thing to be optimistic about where the White Sox are concerned now.
Thank you, Stan. Appreciate you. I think there's a little more than that, but I understand, man. It's ugly and it's distressing, and you're certainly entitled to feel about it all the ways that people are feeling about it. You know, I really do think that offense is gonna come around a little bit. I worry about Tony. I worry about the defense. I worry about Liam Hendricks, but he certainly earned the right to try and pitch through some of these issues here early on. But man, that whole division is, look, Cleveland is going to be a little better than people thought. Detroit, I think, still is going to end up playing a little better than they have. Minnesota is the one that's running away. And if you don't believe that Minnesota is going to run away, then it's going to be right there for them. 670 The Score is where you are. Matt Spiegel's who you're with on Hit and Run here on The Score. A little bit later in the hour, Joe West. More of your phone calls coming up at 312-644-6767.
Hit and Run Sunday mornings, 9 a.m. to noon on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Kershaw's 0-2 pitch. Clayton Kershaw, the Dodgers strikeout king, 2,697.
That's Joe Davis on the call, and Clayton Kershaw is the all-time strikeout leader in the history of the Dodgers. That's a real franchise to be the all-time strikeout leader for. The record he broke is Don Sutton, who seemed to pitch forever. The late Don Sutton, the Hall of Famer, was a tremendous compiler of starts, of wins, of strikeouts. Was obviously very, very good, but he just kept going and going and going. Kershaw is 34 years old, has been pitching for 15 years in the bigs, and is now at 2,700 career strikeouts. Pretty amazing for the guy who was a high school teammate of Matthew Stafford in 7-on-7 football. Sean Sears has been working overnights quite a bit, now the producer of Hit and Run here with me on a Sunday morning. And you said you had something that Grobstein your guy Les, used to bring up about Kershaw?
Yeah, I've only gotten into one argument on the air with Les. Plenty off the air, but one argument on the air. He tried to tell me that he didn't think Clayton Kershaw would be a Hall of Famer. And I just started going, he's, you know, MVP, Cy Young winner, you know, 9-time All-Star. It's like, I think this guy's a safe bet to be in the Hall of Fame. And he's like, I don't know. I just don't know if I've seen enough.
It's crazy. Yeah, no, he's locked and loaded. People don't get wins anymore, so you're not gonna worry about the win total itself being the thing. And Kershaw, dominant as he is with the times, the years of excellence when the stuff was just elite. And now with the heater down, he's reinvented himself in a really, really smart way. The curveball is still exquisite.
Right.
Treat yourself, folks. Look out there. You can find it online. And maybe we'll find it before the end of the show as I throw the gauntlet down for Sean here. But the moment that Vin Scully first saw Clayton Kershaw's curveball at spring training when he was a 19-year-old pitcher, and Scully, who had seen everything and everybody, obviously, was just absolutely blown away by that curveball. Because it was curveball for a strike three. He's like, oh, boy. That's Scully, who called Koufax perfect games, seeing it for the first time. Among active pitchers in baseball, Clayton Kershaw, fourth all-time among actives with strikeouts. Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, Zach Greinke above him. That's it. Interesting to look at this list. Number 12 on the active strikeout list will probably pitch for the White Sox in the next month. That is Johnny Cueto. And other than that, Not a lot of White Sox and Cubs connections, understandably so. 670, the score is where you are. We'll play Joe West at the top of the hour. I want you to hear this, though, before we go back to the phone lines. And callers, hang on. We will get to you for sure at 312-644-6767. Keegan Thompson, the Cubs reliever we just spoke to, talking about the baseballs. It's really compelling because we think about the baseballs from a hitter's perspective a lot, don't we? We think about is it a rabbit ball or is it more of a dead ball? And certainly the dead ball right now, it's a little bit more dead. It's something where it's kind of coalescing with some rules changes that they're hoping to make and some other things they're hoping to do in a way of trying to bring some contact back. And I'm a guy who would welcome that. I would enjoy that. So some of the contact perspective as opposed to the home run perspective. But it's damaging right now to the overall numbers. The batting average league-wide is very low right now. So it's not really working necessarily. But from the pitcher's perspective, Keegan Thompson said sometimes, you know, one is rubbed down with that mud that you need to and the other one is not. And in a given inning, you're getting different baseballs where the seams are rising a little more, difficult to control. Here's Chris Bassitt of the Mets talking about the baseballs as well earlier this week.
Of overall frustration with the fact that it keeps happening at this clip.
Yeah, it's extremely annoying to see your teammates constantly get hit. And if we get hit by certain pitches, it is what it is. But to get hit in the head, the amount that we're getting hit is unbelievable. I had some close calls tonight, which I've been hit in the face. I don't ever want to do that to anybody ever. But the MLB has a very big problem with the baseballs. I mean, they're bad. Everyone knows it. Every pitcher in the league knows it. They're bad. They don't care. The MLB doesn't give a damn about it. They don't care. We've told them our problems with them. They don't care.
What are the problems with them? What's different about them?
They're all different. The first inning, they're decent. The third inning, they're bad. The fourth inning, they're okay. The fifth inning, they're bad. Then we have different climates. Everything's different. There's no common ground with the balls. There's nothing the same outing to outing. They're bad.
Man, that is that's a pitcher who's been around a long time. Chris Bassitt, originally a White Sox pitcher, I think part of the Samardzija trade to Oakland originally, and well, of course he's. That was a little bit of a rough one. Marcus Semien turned out pretty well.
Yeah, he's a decent player, huh?
Yeah, as well. It's kind of a rough trade to look
at. We won't
bring
up Fernando Tatis Jr.
No, no, no. It's a different thing. It's a different thing. But remember, without Tatis Jr. for Shields, none of this other stuff happens. That was the hammer. Not the curveball, as Keegan Thompson called it, but that was the hammer. Man, that's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for Major League Baseball to hear pitchers who just can't resist. And it's not a hitter who wishes he had more home runs bitching about it. It's a pitcher who's trying to hold on to the ball and have control and sees how often guys are getting hit. His own team. I believe the Mets lead MLB in being hit by pitches. And one of the reasons why, according to Chris Bassitt, is the bad baseballs that other guys are throwing and that he himself has to throw and it gets away and then other teams think they're throwing at people. It's an ugly bit of chaos for the league right now. They own the factory. So the chain of command is very insidious. Need a few more links in that chain of command.
Hit by pitches, by the way. Mets 19. Next high is San Diego at 16. So, yeah, they're leading the way.
Yeah, they're leading the way on that one. 670, the score is where you are. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. This is Jim in Beecher on Hit and Run. Good morning, Jim.
How you doing, Matt? Happy Sunday. And, hey, don't ever lose this show. It's beautiful, man.
All right, man. Thank you.
The reason I'm calling about the White Sox, just a few observations and maybe a couple predictions. So just kind of hang with me. Number one, this team, if you watch them play, and I think you know because you love baseball too, when you watch a team and you get the vibes of how they play, this team is not as nearly as good as a lot of people seem to think they are. okay. Defense, they've already blown five saves. The other caller mentioned that all they do is kind of hit home runs. They don't go well from first to third, airmailing throws from the outfield. Okay. Having said that, this team is, don't be surprised going forward if there might be a shakeup in this team come by the end of June. Okay, I'm going to leave that at that.
Well, no. What do you mean? What do you mean? Like, what kind of shakeup? What are some of the options?
Don't be surprised. I'm kind of out on a limb on this, but I'm going to stay with it. You may have a change in leadership on the field, period. The team is going to be floundering, and instead of being a top three team, that's just the opposite. And I think in one way, shape, or form, my gut tells me they're going to try to salvage the season. Number two, don't be surprised, again, if this team, believe it or not, does not make the playoffs, okay? Number three, if it gets that bad, like I think it potentially could, let's see what happens to the hierarchy at the end of the season with this team.
Well, listen to you, Jim, is forecasting change and doom and then potentially even bigger change than that. They're in the middle of a window here. And all their young core offensive players are signed for years and years to come, which is why you make deals like going to get A.J. Pollock, which is why you make other deals that hopefully they will make at the deadline if need be, and certainly in the offseason, to spend money and approach the competitive balance tax or go over the competitive balance tax. This is your moment to go for it. Look, I'm on record, and a lot of people are. I think the choice of manager is a really unfortunate one for White Sox fans because it diminishes a lot of the excitement and a lot of the joy because there's an unpleasantness that goes along with how it went down and just the overall demeanor of Tony, frankly. And that's just a fact. You know, that's not me telling you, I don't like Tony and blah, blah, blah. I'm telling you, I talk to fans every single day on Parkins and Spiegel. I deal with them every single day. The volume of White Sox fans who are displeased with Tony in terms of their experience is vast. It's extremely vast. There have also been lots of very specific strategic errors that have gone on this year. And there also were, of course, last year, the rules issues and things like that. But I don't see that change happening unless Tony is the one who wants it. And he gives off 0% the feel of a guy who wants it. This guy, he's loving doing it. He's thrilled to be there. And he hates to lose. He loves to win. He danced the other day on his way in when they did win. He's addicted to it. I understand. I probably would be too. And I don't think that Jerry's going to come down from on high and say, no, this isn't working. I think they'll be able to point at injuries. They'll be able to point at all sorts of other things. So I don't think that's going to be the case. But trust me, everybody in this town who knows people in the organization, who thinks about the organization, who's watching it closely, they talk about it. They bring it up. I end up in conversations with baseball people all the time. You think they'll ever make a change there? You think they'll make a change? And my answer to them is the one I'm telling you now. Not unless Tony wants to change. And I don't think Tony's a guy who gets embarrassed either. He doesn't get embarrassed.
No, that's for sure.
Right? It's not, I guess you know the rules better than I do. He was comfortable saying that last year. Who'd be comfortable saying that?
Man, it's like listening and cutting some of his like post game. There's things that he says that drive you insane, but then he says stuff and I'm like, okay, I get it. I get it to some extent. You
yeah.
know?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of baseball wisdom in there. There
right,
is.
Right.
But there's certain tenets that are just kind of, they're a little bit outdated, and sometimes he doesn't seem to grasp that it's okay to evolve with the game. You know, the best managers evolve with the game, and he's done a lot of that, but there are certain tenets and certain moments that drive you nuts. I will say this, over the last week, and we'll see, do we have a lineup yet today? Grab me that lineup if you could. Is Andrew Vaughn healthy? Seeing Andrew Vaughn up in the two hole, seeing Leury down at the nine hole over the course of the last week is progress. The way he talked about Leury and what he can do, the way he's talked about in the past, valuing the singles. You're looking for a single. The way that he pitched to Byron Buxton last week, a week ago, because he was afraid of Luis Arias, the contact hitter up next. And so that guy's hitting 340. You know, is there, you know, there's a respect for the single. There's an underlying respect for contact and the single, which is frankly outdated in terms of making bigger and broader decisions, be it lineup based or sometimes even strategically based. There's room for nuance there, obviously. But that's one tenet that needs to get changed. And maybe it has. Maybe it has, because over the last week it's been different. You got a White Sox lineup for me today. What do we got here, Sean?
So we've got Tim Anderson leading off, playing shortstop. Luis Robert, center field, batting second.
All right, so pause there. So Robert is back up to two after hitting six with Vaughn at two the other day. Is Vaughn in it? Keep going.
So no Andrew Vaughn.
Okay,
it's
going to
be Sheets and Pollock in right and left. You've got Jose Abreu and then Yasmani Grandal, then Abreu, then Sheets, Pollock, Garcia, Reese McGuire, and then Josh Harrison.
Yeah, okay. Well, Josh Harrison was perfect yesterday. So, made great contact, and he's got him down at nine. Leury Garcia is your worst offensive player. And has been.
He just keeps finding ways into the lineup, too.
Yeah, he keeps... I'd much rather see Jake Berger at third and Josh Harrison at second in this lineup. But Tony is Tony loves singles, and Tony loves handedness. He is big time a slave to handedness, sometimes without seemingly caring too much about the history of the numbers themselves or how a lefty is doing against a specific righty. So, look, there are some troubling things there. But what I'm saying is I don't foresee that changing anytime soon. I really don't. Maybe it will, but that's the way it feels as of right now. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Spiegs here with you on 670 The Score. Want to keep talking with you, and we'll talk to Joe West at the top of the hour on Hit and Run.
Hit and Run, Sunday mornings, 9 a.m. to noon on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Liner to the left, coming in, and Ian Happ made a diving try. Did he make the catch? Yes, he did. Second base umpire Edwin Moscoso made the call. Moscoso looked over at third, and Jerry Lane did not make any move at all, so Moscoso then held up the fist with the thumb, so out on a great play by Ian Happ in left field on a sinking line drive hit by Lorenzo Cain.
Ian Happ having a terrific year right now. 25th in Major League Baseball in wins above replacement, the Fangraphs version, F4. Manny Machado atop that list, having the best year overall that takes into account everything. It is certainly imperfect, as almost all numbers are, but he is worth two wins already, 2.0 for Manny Machado. And then a lot of the usual customers up there. Jose Ramirez, the incredible Jose Ramirez of the Guardians, Nolan Arenado, Mike Trout, young Wander Franco of the Tampa Bay Rays has been an absolute marvel. Francisco Lindor is back among the top players in the game. George Springer, who homered twice yesterday. And then there's some fun new names. I love J.P. Crawford, the Seattle shortstop, the former Philly. He's a terrific contact hitter and defensive shortstop. Jazz Chisholm of the Miami Marlins is up there, one of the best players in the game. And how about Jeremy Peña, Carlos Correa's replacement down there in Houston, having a terrific start to his Major League Baseball career. It is Matt Spiegler with you on Hit and Run on The Score. We keep rolling with your phone calls. Mike is in Rogers Park and is now on The Score. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Is it me?
Yes, Mike? That's you, Mike.
Okay. I thought I heard right. Hey.
Yeah, I think I said right by accident.
You set me up really well with all that firing on Tony and this and that. I come with a ray of hope, which is rare among Sox fans. We live more on the ledge than inside the house. But contrary to the panic after 20 games, I'm old enough to remember 1983. They started out in the first 40 games, 16-24. Dead in the water, looked horrible. Nobody, not one person optimistic. They won 99 games that year because they had a manager who could keep the team calm and motivated and facing the right direction, and that was Tony La Russa. He knows how to turn around a job like this.
Well, that's a long time ago. I hope you're right. I hope that he does have that effect. You are certainly right to point out that specific season as an example. And you don't even have to go back that far to see a team that was not playing well and then finds it. I mean, last year's Atlanta Braves, after they lost Ronald Acuna Jr., they stumbled like crazy. They were hanging around 500. Even when the deadline came, at the deadline, it was like, well, should they even go for it or not? And they did go for it. They went out and got a bunch of outfielders and started to hit well, and some of their young pitchers put it all together, and they won the World Series. So, yes, no, history is littered with precedents of it being way too damn early to close the book on anything like that. Is Tony still the right guy to keep a team focused and keep a team on the right mindset? We'll see. I haven't really liked their apparent focus and mindset so far in a lot of parts of this year as I've watched them play some of the fundamentals. But long, long season. Scott is in Peru on the score. Hello, Scott. Welcome in.
Hey, Speaks. So I just want to kind of talk about the White Sox. You know, I feel like everybody's so down on this team right now. And this is basically the same team that won 93 games last year. You know, we've looked bad. This April has looked awful. I was at the game yesterday, and honestly, they actually looked good. But I feel like a lot of things, like, you know, Robert's not going to hit this bad throughout the year. Pollock isn't going to hit this bad. Abreu, this is a typical April for him. So I really don't think that this team is going to be as bad as what people are saying. As going back to the guy that said basically they're going to fire Tony, fire Han, that's just crazy. I mean, Tony isn't going anywhere. As much as I wish he would go somewhere, he isn't going anywhere. And Han, although he, you know, did really bad this offseason, in my opinion, and moves, you know, I don't think he's going anywhere either.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think, obviously, when in doubt with this franchise and with the Reinsdorf franchise, bet on loyalty and bet on consistency. And for the most part, as you zoom out and look at the whole large sample of the thing, it's worked. So, and this is something that that Jerry very much wanted, and now Jerry very much has, is to have Tony here. I really just do believe that Jerry thought it was going to be much more of a plug-and-play situation. Like, this team's ready. This team's good. Good to go. Could be anybody. I don't know if it could be anybody. Tony in River North. Tony, you're on the score. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Matt. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
I just wanted to do a little more history. The other fellow covered it pretty well. But in 1983, they were 7 games under 500 on May 27th. Reinsdorf had Bobby Winkles, who was either a coach or a scout for them. I can't recall. He came through, evaluated the team, and said, stay the course, which they did. Finished 36 games above 500, ran away with the division. 1984, the Cubs were awful in spring training, horrible. They won the division. Of course, they made 2 or 3 big trades after spring training started to get disastrous. 1989, Jim Frey told reporters it was going to be a terrible year after he watched the first series or two of the season. The Cubs won the division. 2000, nobody expected the White Sox to do anything. They won the division. So it's been said enough. You said it perfectly. It's a little early. Let's relax. The injuries are not good. And I don't agree with everything Tony does, but I think Tony is the least of their issues. I don't think he is an issue. And I think he showed that last year. That's it.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate the call. That's Tony talking about Tony there in River North. You know, the thing is, experientially, it's the vibe. Texter says, it's the vibe. That's it. This is a White Sox fan. Tony just looks miserable. What should be the best time in Sox history has become angst-ridden. So that's how that guy feels. He was supposed to be a strategic advantage, he continues. He's been the opposite. Supposed to improve defense, base running, overall baseball IQ. It has not happened. See, I understand very much where that guy is coming from. That said, baseball teams can win a lot of different ways, and the season is long. I was very bummed out at the playoff performance. And part of what I was bummed out at was the coaching in that playoff performance. I thought they were outmanaged, outmaneuvered, outfundamentaled. Their defensive alignments did not work in their favor at all. Meanwhile, the Astros' defensive alignment was very, very good. Pitch sequencing and the way that they were attacked, and some of the pitchers have come out and talked about that in the spring and early on, and maybe that that will increase. Maybe that will improve as we go. Lord knows there's plenty of time to work it all out. 670, The Score is where you are. It's Hit and Run. Me, Matt Spiegler, with you till about 12:30. All right, this was really fun, and I promise you it is worth hearing, even if you hate, maybe especially if you hate, Cowboy Joe West. You'll hear him next on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.